Hi everyone, I'm Heidi Rogers, and this is Tell the Others. I wanted to create a place for meaningful conversation, life lessons, and parenting hacks. Sometimes I chat to interesting people, sometimes I answer questions about parenting or life stuff, and sometimes I just rant. These episodes are filled with stories and insights that made me say, ugh, I just have to tell the others. So let's dive in to hear what we can learn today. One of the things that everyone has been saying to me so much this week and today is I'm being pathetic that this is bothering me. I'm being dramatic that I'm hating lockdown. I'm being lazy. I know the things to do that would help me feel better. I know I can go for a walk. I know I can meditate. I know I can help myself, and I'm not helping myself. And that's just pathetic. And there's just this like berating of oneself. And the thing that kills me about that is the lack of understanding around the brain and what happens when we go into lockdown and what happens to our nervous system in general with this stuff. And so I want to kind of spend, and I know a lot of you guys already know this, but I just want to spend a little bit of time going through this. So yeah, please stop me if you have a question, put it in the chat pad, but otherwise I'm just going to ramble about the rant because I feel very fired up about it. Okay. So we know that the two most important parts of the brain when we're discussing adversity, challenge, stress, what lockdowns are, is the amygdala and the cortex, right? Amygdala is all about fight flight response, keeping you safe. It's obsessed with your safety and survival. Cortex is all about forward planning, logic, consequence, reasoning, impulse control, motivation, productivity, all that good magic. That's the cortex. When we are in a state of stress, amygdala takes over, cortex goes to the back of the room, amygdala hogs the microphone and just dictates everything. There's not as much of a conscious choice about that as you like to believe. I had this client this morning who was like, I'm being so lazy. I'm so mad at myself. I know all of the things to do. I know how to help myself. I'm not helping myself. I'm just wallowing. This is so pathetic and blah, blah, blah. And I said, dude, you're giving yourself way more credit and you're giving yourself a way bigger sense of control than is actually happening. You don't have as much control about this that you think you do. There's so much automatic responding that your body and your nervous system are doing in times like this that you can't control of it as much as you think you can. So what I explained to her was polyvagal theory and explained how where you sit on the ladder is how you're coping and how you're responding. And just to refresh all of your memories, at the top of the ladder is Winnie the Pooh. And this, you know, the Winnie the Pooh thing is not Stephen Porges's idea, the dude who came up with polyvagal theory. He'd probably be mortified if he learned that this is how I explain it to people. But Winnie the Pooh is at the top. At the middle is Tigger. And at the bottom is Eeyore. Winnie the Pooh is safe, social, and engaged. I can do it. I can learn. Yay, life. I love being alive. Tigger is fight, flight response, basically that activated, hyper, bouncing, irritable. Oh God, what are we going to do? You know, just like activated. You know what Tigger's like. And then at the bottom is Eeyore, which is shut down and just, I just want to stay in bed. I want to curl up. I don't want to do life. It's all hard. I can't take anything new. I can't learn. And Eeyore is where I feel most people right now are at. I don't know what the stats are. I wrote it down to look because a client told me this morning that she read a stat today that said 40% of adults in Melbourne qualify for a clinical depression diagnosis. I believe that. I reckon it's actually higher than that. I have seen more clients this lockdown and the last lockdown get back on their antidepressants, back on their anti-anxiety medication. For the record, it's the same. It's the same part of the brain that they target. I think this, and time will tell, and research I'm sure is already being done that will back this, but I believe that this lockdown is actually worse than last year. A number of suicidal ideation comments I'm hearing from people, the clients coming out of the woodwork, I mean, clients I closed with years ago, that this lockdown are emailing me going, hey, can I have an appointment? All my friends that are clinicians are booked out. My wait list, I have like, I don't know, 32 people on my wait list. The earliest I could probably see someone is like January. Like all of us are slammed with people wanting support for their mental health. And honestly, it's worse now, I think, than it was even last year when we were in our longest lockdown. So I want to kind of say that, I guess, to normalize and validate. And just sometimes I swear I wish I could record sessions with clients and play it for people, just for people to see how normal they are and how, dude, what you just said is what the last six people I saw said, like almost verbatim. Everyone is feeling the same. And this client this morning said, yeah, but I see my friends' Instagrams and I see their, and I talk to them and they're all like fine and loving life. And I'm the only one who's having a hard time. And I'm like, that is not true. I know this because I follow some of my friends on Instagram and I see them in session and I watch them fall apart, struggle, be in pain, hate their kids, hate their partner, hate their job, hate themselves. And then on Instagram, they're like, love my coffee, you know, love my kids. My husband's the best. And I'm like, that is such a lie. Like you just said to me yesterday how much you hate your life. It is just not true. When you see people posting their highlights reel on social media and, you know, I love going for bike rides. No, you don't. Ugh. It kills me because I feel like it makes people feel so much worse about their experience when they compare themselves to their friends or their family or the other school moms or whatever on how they're spending time or what they're doing to get through lockdown. It is just not true that if you have a friend who is saying that they're loving life, like, I don't know. So, oh my God, I have so much I want to say. So the first thing, if we go back to the polyvagal theory, is you got to think about, where am I on the ladder? Am I Winnie the Pooh, Tigger, or Eeyore? Where am I on, how am I feeling? And just to refresh your memory, for those of you who don't know polyvagal theory yet, or you're learning it, Stephen Porges, the dude who basically created the theory that explains mind-body connection. So when I say, imagine yourself biting into a lemon, you'll start to salivate, right? It's the theory that explains when I get really stressed at work and I'm run down, I get sick, right? We all know this. So there's, you kind of know polyvagal theory without knowing it. Deb Dana is then the clinician who came up with the ladder concept. The vagus nerve is a nerve that runs from the brain through all the parts of your body. Poly meaning many. So all the many parts of the vagus nerve is essentially, and again, dude, it's his life's work. We could seriously do a 100-day lecture on polyvagal theory. There's so much into it. And I'm giving you like a 10-minute version. So there's a lot that I'm missing out. But this is just the overview to understand. The key thing to understand with polyvagal theory is it is not a menu of options. It is a sequence of events. So if you are at ER right now with lockdown or at Tigger, you can't just jump up to Winnie the Pooh if you're at Eeyore. You have to pass through Tigger to get up to Winnie the Pooh. It doesn't work like that, that you just go, today I want to feel like Winnie the Pooh. And so that's just what I'm going to focus my mindset on. I'm going to make a list of goals for the day and I'm just going to be positive. It doesn't work like that. If you are down at Eeyore, that means that you have to pass through that irritability, that fight flight, that mobilizing kind of tension, agitation, because that mobilizes you out of the shutdown state. Okay. So then the next thing, and the big thing too with this and homeschool and learning, and why I get so irritated with homeschool Nazis and educators who shove it down parents' throats or guilt them, or schools that shame parents for not doing enough, or parents who shame themselves, is you cannot learn if you don't feel safe, period, fact, no negotiation. If you do not feel safe psychologically, emotionally, mentally, physically, blah, 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 all the safety features, all the safety things, if you do not feel safe, you cannot learn. Duh. If we were in the front line of a battle and we were in the front trench and there's bullets whizzing past and I turn to you and go, hey, do you want to learn guitar? I have a guitar right here. We could just do it, you know, in between shots if you want. You would look at me and go, Heidi, are you nuts? There are bullets whizzing past. Now is not the time to learn guitar, nor French, or how to bake sourdough bread, Nobody cares. I'm just trying to survive. If you are trying to get your kid to do schoolwork, you are competing with a nervous system that's trying to regulate and trying to find safety, which is not going to happen to get a kid to learn, especially when lockdowns are like, roll the dice, you know, what day of the week is it? We're going to have lockdown? I don't know. Let's see what happens. It doesn't, like, it's not stable right now. Our brains don't like that. Our nervous system is preoccupied with just finding stability and finding safety. So to learn on top of all this, ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous, so unrealistic. And then what happens? You have kids who need to be studying or doing their, you know, online learning. And then you have parents who are going, you need to sit down and you need to focus and you need to do this. And, you know, coming back and sit down and you need to get on the camera and no. And what's the parent contributing to this shit show? Lack of safety, dismissing their feelings, invalidating their experience, shaming, criticizing, not making them feel safe psychologically, mentally, emotionally. And then we wonder why everyone has depression, anxiety, why our kids are acting horrendous, why their behavior is clingy or needy or annoying or whatever their behavior is, but for lack of a better word, annoying, negative, because they don't feel safe. And our role is totally screwed up right now of being parents versus teachers when that's not what they need. They don't need a teacher. They have one. They have many. They need a parent. They need someone to be making them feel safe. Back to polyvagal theory and the latter. So parents say to me, or educators say, well, I want my students and my kids to be at the top of the ladder because when they're at Winnie the Pooh, they're safe, social, engaged. They want to learn. They're open to new experiences. They're loving life. How do we get them up there? And I'm like, stop doing everything you're doing. Because what are most parents doing right now? Dismissing, invalidating, shaming, criticizing, minimizing their kids' experience, their disdain for online learning, their frustration of missing parties, their anger for missing yet another birthday party, their own or someone else's, not being able to see their friends, not being able to do basketball, whatever. That is legit for them. That is really serious stuff. And the way that we're stressed about money or our jobs or our businesses or whatever, our kids are stressed about all that stuff that you might think is really inconsequential and stupid, but it's a huge deal to them. So how do we get our kids to the top of the ladder? By not dismissing, minimizing, criticizing, and invalidating, and the cream of the crop, raising your voice. If you can just stop doing that, stop criticizing, minimizing, dismissing, invalidating, and raising your voice, that will help them shoot to the top of the ladder. The other things that promote safety, being calm, mindfulness, kind of all the boring stuff you know, rest, nature, exercise, belly breathing, good diet, blah, 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 all that kind of basic stuff we all know. Do that. Yeah, that helps them get to the top of the ladder. But a better way, I think, to put it is stopping, don't do minimizing, dismissing, invalidating, criticizing, shaming, raising your voice. But where I really see this as a problem, so okay, fine, you can see this in the parenting context and don't do that to your kids. But where I really see this as a problem is everyone is doing it to themselves. And you underestimate the power of the voice in your head. If the way that you're speaking to yourself is dismissing, invalidating, criticizing, shaming, invalidating, judgment, all of that, and raising your voice to yourself in your head, how does that make your brain feel? Safe or unsafe? Unsafe. You don't need that right now. Your amygdala is already freaking out about how much unsafety there is everywhere. And every time we find out a new press conference, you know, what the lockdown, what the numbers are and what the lockdown status is it extended? Is it not? It hits like the trifecta of anxiety and stress for your brain. The way that I view it in my head is like, you know, the movie Inside Out, the Pixar movie where it's like all the feelings live in the like control center of this little girl's brain. And you see all the different emotions, you know, kind of running, you know, controlling the control board and running the show and whatever. I see it like that. And what I believe gets us in high alert is it's like there's a three bulb system, three red lights, sort of like the X Factor where like the X's go up on the screen. There's these three red lights. And the first one is discomfort. The second one is uncertainty. And the third one is lack of control. When your brain, so it's like when your brain sees one go off and light up and it's like, oh God, we have some discomfort, everyone. We have discomfort. We have discomfort. Everyone sort of like freaks out in the brain. Then you add, oh God, we have discomfort. Now we have uncertainty. Everyone sort of braces. And then, oh no, now we get lack of control lights up. And then it's just panic. Everyone's running around. You know, I view it as sort of like when you see that like security footage of an earthquake, you know, in like a grocery store or something, and like the shelves are shaking and people are running everywhere and papers are flying, you know, that's what it feels like to me is when our amygdala goes, you guys, we are not safe because we've just hit the trifecta. Discomfort, uncertain, lack of control. And what is a lockdown? What is COVID really? The trifecta. Lockdowns are like made, they are sewn from the fabric of discomfort, uncertainty, and a lack of control. And then we wonder, why am I falling apart? Why am I so lazy? Why am I lacking total motivation to do anything? Why do all I want to do is just watch Netflix and order Uber Eats? Because once the trifecta goes off in your brain and all three lights are lit up, amygdala becomes obsessed with survival. Nothing else matters. And that is really all I have capacity for. It's just surviving. My five-year-old said to me at 6:45 this morning, she wanted a lollipop. And I said, sure, because she was up in the night. Her sister was up in the night. I was so tired. I just wanted to go to sleep for a few more hours. And she found a bag of lollipops and she wanted a lollipop. And I said, sure, dude, have a lollipop. It's 7 o'clock. It's not even 7 o'clock. I don't care because I am trying to survive. Is that the end of the world? No. Is that great for her teeth? No. Is that awesome to have sugar? She probably just wanted to have more food, but I just wanted to go back to sleep, ma'am. And so I said, yes, have a lollipop at 7 because I know I am fixating, my brain is fixating on survival right now. And I gave up a long time ago, thanks to lots of my own therapy, that dismissing, minimizing, invalidating, criticizing, and judging and shaming my experience, how I'm feeling, whatever, does not serve me. It drops me to the bottom of the ladder. It makes me more unproductive. It makes me depressed. It makes me anxious. It doesn't help. So I try not to live there anymore, and I don't play in that space. I validate how I feel. I'm compassionate on myself. I'm empathetic with myself. I don't shame myself. I connect into that vulnerability. I call other friends who I can be vulnerable with and who are vulnerable with me, who are not shaming, who aren't posting the, I love lockdown, you know, yay, homeschool. I go to those people who are at the same sort of level of honesty and vulnerability as me. And that's what helps me get up to the top of the ladder. Now, just to be clear too, you don't pick where you are on the ladder. Most of it is physiological and your nervous system responding to input, sensory input, kind of, the environment you live in, the relationships with the people you live with, you know, is it stressful? Is it tense? Is it pressured? Is it calm? Is it relaxing? Is it supportive? Is it validating? All of that is consciously, subconsciously feeding into your sense of safety and general overall safety in your home. So also dreams, nightmares. I had a nightmare last night. I don't have a lot of nightmares. So that also screwed up my sleep and I was up racing heart. It was a classic, you know, a bad man chasing me and one of my kids. And doesn't surprise me, though, that I'm having dreams like that, right? Does this make sense? Because if my brain is going, we're in lockdown, the world is unsafe right now. You know, the mask, no mask, vaccine, what's going to happen? The Delta strain, you know, all of this uncertainty, lack of control. Oh my God, when is it going to be over? When am I going to be able to see my family again in LA? Like, so much stuff is swirling around, right? Makes sense then why I'm having a dream about feeling unsafe, feeling out of control, uncertain, right? And then you take the lack of sleep, and then that compounds the feeling of not feeling safe, you know, because sleep deprivation doesn't make you feel safe. It makes you feel crazy. So there's that. But remembering with the ladder too, the ladder you have, oh, and also before I go into this, you oscillate between, you go up and down the ladder all day long. It's not like I had a Winnie the Pooh day, Dick. You know, doesn't work like that. You will oscillate. You will go up and down the ladder throughout the day. Some hours, 10 minutes, you might go up and down. How that would look, the example I always give is you're on the way to your friend's house for a dinner party. You're feeling Winnie the Pooh, top of the ladder, safe, social. Yay, I love my friends. You get to dinner. Someone starts talking about going on a holiday and they're going to rent a yacht, and you start feeling less than, lame, I don't have that much money right now, I've not been on holiday in ages, and you start to drop down. Maybe you start to get a little bit irritated. Why is he going on and on about his holiday plans? What a jerk. So gross. Ew. Then they all say, and we're all, you know, getting married and planning our weddings, and then you're sitting there single going, now I really feel like crap. You know, they're all going on holidays and they're all getting married, or, you know, whatever. People are talking about stuff that you want and you don't have, or whatever. It makes you feel sad, anxious, depressed. Now you're down in Eeyore. Forget it. I'm going to go, guys. Bye. See ya. Get in the car. Call your bestie. Tell them about the dinner party. It was so crap. And everyone's talking about their trips and their marriage and wedding. And I felt like such a loser. And your friend is validating and supportive and empathetic and compassionate. Goes, oh, dude, I know. It's so annoying. I never liked Brian anyway. He's always such a jerk. Why don't we plan a holiday for later this year? You know, and says that sort of stuff that... yeah, you're right. Thank you. And sort of fills your bucket back up. You kind of move back up the ladder. By the time you hang up the phone, you're back up to Winnie the Pooh, and you get home and your housemate's there, and you go, yeah, let's watch some crappy TV and eat some ice cream. And then you're back up to Winnie the Pooh, right? So you oscillate in a business meeting at work. You could go up and down the ladder twice, you know, depending on how the meeting goes. And if you feel like you said something stupid or whatever. The key to all this, though, is safety, right? And I'm trying to communicate to myself, the people I live with, safety. You communicate emotional safety through being validating, connected, empathizing, not judging, not shaming. You obviously communicate physical safety by not hitting people, threatening timeouts, threatening disconnection from me, which is what timeouts are, which is the scariest thing for a child, to be disconnected from their primary caregiver. Raising your voice is a key one because it's so scary to a child's nervous system, yelling, because yelling is unsettling. Doesn't make me feel safe. Definitely makes me feel unsafe. And kind of sends my whole nervous system into a bit of a, wah! And it's a quick way to shoot someone to Tigger where they're in fight flight response, or down to Eeyore and shut down. So yelling is kind of, let's not even say yelling, just raising your voice does not make children feel safe. But again, are you raising your voice to yourself and in your own head? Is that how you're speaking to yourself? Because if you are, that's not helping. And that you're making it harder, worse for yourself if you're doing that. And then, you know, you wonder why you can't get out of the fight flight response, or your amygdala is so hijacky. Well, because if you're yelling at yourself and you're criticizing yourself constantly, and the fact that you did not make organic banana muffins today, and you didn't do homeschool, and there's 7 bags of laundry to do. And, you know, when you get on your back about that stuff, it doesn't make you feel safe. It just makes you feel judged, shamed, and crap, and doesn't help you go up the ladder. Keeps you down. The other piece to this, then, this is in response to the, yeah, but everyone else seems to be having a fine old time and I'm the only one that's struggling. To that piece, we got to go way back. We got to go back to like when you were in utero, and we got to go back to your first trimester of life. So One of the cool things to come out of research in the last 10-ish years, 15 maybe, is an understanding of when our nervous system gets built. So if we talk so much about the ladder and our nervous system and wanting our kids to be able to be regulated, and regulated basically means having a balance. You know, you often hear the terms dysregulated and regulated, and what that really means is, yeah, finding a balance in your nervous system and in your life and in your body. So when you go running, your body will try to regulate and balance your breathing, your oxygen intake, so that it can pump enough oxygen to all of your muscles and to get you to run, right? Anytime you have, like, and then if you say get really dehydrated, you crave water, again, your body trying to find homeostasis, trying to find balance. So when we're regulated, we're balanced. When we're dysregulated, we're unbalanced. A lot of people will criticize and judge themselves for being so dysregulated, or they'll look at their kids. They'll bring their kids to me and go, Heidi, my kid's a nutter. They are so dysregulated. They have ragey issues. They have anxious issues. They are just so, they have such issues with their big feelings and their big emotions. And when I dig a little bit deeper and get a little bit curious about pregnancy, birth, and their first 3 months, what do you know? We discover when their nervous system was being built and all of that wiring was being laid down, there was a lot of stress or a lot of anxiety going on. So back to the, why is everyone else stressed and I'm, or everyone else is calm and I'm stressed about lockdowns or whatever. Not everyone's playing with the same nervous system that you have. Facts. Not everyone has the same skills as Michael Jordan with making a three-pointer, right? There's certain things of how he was born, his build. He's better at some things than you and I are, right? Everyone has different things they're good at and have natural abilities at. Some of us have nervous systems that are just struggling and aren't built like everyone else's. And that comes from stuff in childhood that you didn't pick, as if you had control or picked your mom's pregnancy with you. You didn't. If she was stressed and anxious and pumping lots of cortisol, the stress hormone, and adrenaline into you, you didn't pick that. But think about what that does to a nervous system that's being built. Right? If as the nervous system is being built, everyone around, like, so the builders are putting in the, pouring the concrete, they're building the foundation of the house. And as the builders are setting the frame and pouring the foundation, people, randoms, are walking around the site yelling, it's really dangerous here. There's bombs everywhere. You might be attacked. Protect yourself. The builders are going to be pouring a lot of fear into that concrete and into a lot of the beams and the structures that they're building. It's going to be a lot of fear, anxiety, tension, looking for danger, looking for trouble, hypervigilance, we call that. Volatility almost in a way of just like constantly looking for when's the next kind of bomb going to go off. But if the house is being built in a serene meadow and the builders have like beautiful food and music and they're getting regular massages as they build this house and they get naps and they just work whenever you feel like working. And it's just so enjoyable. It's such a beautiful place to build a house. What's that house going to be made of, right? You know, you look at this with like, you know, hand-fed beef and happy chickens and happy cows. And people will say, when you eat a chicken or a cow that was raised happy and a one that was raised in a cage and really sad, the meat tastes different, right? It's tender, untender, tough, whatever, right? The environment of the organism, the environment of as something is being built, casts a very, very, very long shadow. The legacy is great. So one of the things we know from recent-ish research, they did studies where a baby spends the first 2 to 3 months in stress, abuse, not necessarily perpetrated towards them, but say domestic violence, you know, between the parents. Aggression, maybe tension in the home. And a lot of people will say to me, oh yeah, but I left him. I left the abusive marriage when Katie was 8 weeks old. So she doesn't really remember. None of it really impacted her. And I'm like, no, that is like the worst time where you could have stress and anxiety happening, because that's when the rules are being written. I can't remember the stat, but it's something like crazy, like 3 trillion neural pathways and synapses are formed every second or something in a baby. And then I'm totally butchering that stat. It's something different, but it's crazy huge. Like it's billions a day or something like that, or a second. It's nuts. The newborn's brain is laying down what it deems is truth and fact. Is the world safe? Is it unsafe? Is the environment that I'm in calm, stable, reliable? And the keys to this are predictable caregiving, nurturing caregiving, and consistent caregiving. If those 3 things are happening, the nervous system lays down a beautiful system of the world is a safe, good place, and I'm okay. And when stress hits me, I will cry. Someone will come to me. I'll be okay. Awesome. Yay. You're getting a nice start to life. Your nervous system is learning some really nice rules. However, if we have unpredictable, inconsistent, not nurturing caregiving in those first 3 months, the nervous system is getting a bit of a stressful set of instructions of how the world works. I cry. Sometimes people come. Sometimes they don't. I'm not really sure. My ability to regulate is a lot harder because of how my nervous system got laid out. They did these crazy studies, excuse me, where they took 3-month-old babies who had really stressful first 3 months of life. And then they had, and so that's 12 weeks. Think about that. We usually go 12 weeks. You're not even paying attention of what's happening around you when you're, you know, that little. Mm-hmm. And then said, we'll take kids that had a gnarly first 12 weeks, then give them a great 12 years. So they say got out of the abusive environment. Parents got clean and sober, whatever the issues are. And let's see what happens. What do you know? Those kids that had the first 3 months were hard, the next 12 years were great, had a very hard time regulating their nervous system as adults. Then they looked at the reverse. First 3 months of life, really cruisy, awesome, safe, nurturing, predictable, connected, caregiving, consistent. And then gave them 12 years of adversity, challenge, pain, suffering, possible abuse, tough stuff. And they looked at them in adulthood, much easier time regulating their nervous system. Wow. So that research has completely changed the game in our expectations and our understanding of nervous systems, how they regulate, why they regulate. And what happened, you know? So whenever I meet a kid or a parent who tells me about their kid who's very dysregulated, never has happened yet that I hear a story about pregnancy, birth, and the first 3 months of their life were really cruisy, chill, peaceful, blissful, la la la. Never. It is always stories like pregnancy was really stressful. We were not even committed and together. We didn't know if our relationship was going to progress. My husband was away a lot. I was alone a lot. There was a lot of complications with the pregnancy, so I was quite anxious and stressed that it was actually going to be viable. We were renovating our house. I felt really stressed about that. older brother was going through some leukemia treatment. So I was very stressed during that pregnancy, whatever. My mom died, you know, 2 months before the baby, whatever. Do you see what I mean? There are always stories of the fetus getting a lot of cortisol and adrenaline pumped into them. And as their nervous system is being built, it's being built in a bubble of I'm unsafe. Then they come out. The birth is also relevant of how I entered the world. Stressful, not stressful. If I had a dollar for every woman I've met who said they had birth trauma, talk about an untalked about topic. Good Lord. That's like, I could do a whole course, I think mini course on just navigating birth trauma. So, and then you look at the first 3 months of life thing. Ay, ay, ay. So back to the client this morning who was saying, I look at all these people on Instagram who are saying that lockdown is great and they love life. And what's wrong with me that I'm finding it so hard? And I said to her, well, dude, you're not all playing fair with the same nervous system. Your mom's pregnancy, your first 3 months of life. I don't know how different that is from your friends, but I'm tipping it's probably different. The person who is gracefully tackling the adversity that lockdown and COVID and all of this has thrown at them, we're not all playing with the same tools, you know? So to judge yourself and say, why am I finding this so hard? Well, compared to, you know, Susan over there, you don't know what Susan's first 3 months of life were like compared to yours. So that right there could be a huge indicator of why you're struggling more than her. Because maybe you didn't have predictable, consistent, nurturing caregiving. So where do we go with all of this? I think it's just knowing. I feel like just knowing some of this stuff is really comforting and helpful. I know for me, when I learned this stuff, it was like, hallelujah. Like I get to make myself make so much more sense about things. And it's so validating why I feel the way I feel, why I find some parts of this hard. Okay, I see. Then also having, and that then I think frees up compassion, which frees up capacity, which enables me to survive at kind of a higher functioning level. And then when I think about how I apply this to my kids, it's the same thing. You know, I look at my two kids, my eldest, when I compare her pregnancy, birth, and first 3 months of life, was so chill and calm and stable and simple. And I look at her nervous system today and how she responds to challenge and her ability to regulate. And then I compare it to her sister, whose pregnancy was stressful. Birth was, she was a month early. First 3 months of life were very stressful. My husband was in India and traveling a lot in Australia for work. So I was by myself a lot with a 20-month-old and a newborn, no family, not my family around. My in-laws are around, but they're, you know, a bit further out. It was really stressful, really stressful. So the environment that she grew up in her first few weeks of life was a lot of adrenaline, a lot of cortisol, she had a stressed mom, you know? So when I look at her now and I'm like, God, why can't she regulate? Why is she so dysregulated? Why is she so ragey? Some of it's that, some of it's her temperament and genetics and stuff like that, I guess. But where I know most of that comes from is her wiring and how she came out and how her first few months of life were. Now, options. I could spend a lot of time beating myself up about it and shaming myself and criticizing myself and going, oh, I should have known all of this and I should have been more mindful of my, you know, cortisol and adrenaline levels during pregnancy and birth and her first 3 months. But like, dude, hindsight's 20/20 always, right? You made the best decision at the time with the information that you had. Obviously, if we all knew this, we would have done stuff differently, right? And I've Totally. Call my therapist. I've talked to him about this a million times, about the guilt and the shame and, oh, it's all my fault and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But where I ultimately end up is I think about where I am on the ladder. I don't want to be an Eeyore, man. I did that. I was depressed, suicidal for a long time in my early 20s. I don't want to go back there. I don't want to live there. It sucks there. I don't want to do Eeyore. Tigger's anxious and stressful. I don't really want to live there either. I'd rather live up at Winnie the Pooh and be safe, social, and engaged. What makes me a better mom, too, when I'm up at the top of the ladder? So if I want to get to the top of the ladder, what do? I don't criticize myself. I don't minimize how I'm feeling. I don't invalidate. I don't dismiss how I'm feeling. I extend compassion to myself. I do a lot of hand on heart. That's probably one of my favorite postures to when I start hearing myself criticizing myself. I just put a hand on heart and it's just quite comforting. And sometimes both. It's just a quick way to kind of help your nervous system regulate and to calm down. So when we find out, like today, that lockdown is going to be extended, I just think it's helpful to know all this stuff is going on in the background. And I would actually save this call to your phone somewhere, bookmark it. And the next time we have a lockdown, pull it up again and listen to me spout all of this stuff again to remind you that you have less control than you think you do about your response, meaning it's an automatic response of your nervous system and your brain trying to keep you safe. And those three lights have gone off: uncertainty, discomfort, and a lack of control. My brain is going to take over and send me into a bit of a fight flight response, or just obsessed about safety, psychologically, emotionally, physically. Any kind of change is going to feel threatening, because amygdala doesn't like change. Amygdala likes everything to stay the same. Even if we're talking about, but I want to pick up yoga because that's going to help me, amygdala is going to cause such a fight about it and kick up such a fuss and just resist, 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 because it's change. It's different. I don't care if it's helping me. It's different. I don't like it. Get it out. That's what amygdala would say. Doesn't make me feel safe. Change is scary. Change is not to be trusted. Change could hurt us. Change is bad. Let's go with predictable. So I might go with the predictable relationships, unhealthy dynamics, ways that I treat myself, my body, my friends, whatever, just because I know it. Habit pattern. Love it, brain says. So lockdowns, not good. Amygdala is not a fan. Because again, change, uncertainty, discomfort, lack of control. But if you can approach these times with a knowing of what's going on sort of behind the curtain, this is what my brain's doing. This is what my body's doing. This is my nervous system. How was my nervous system built? What were the conditions that I found as my foundation was being poured in my nervous system? What was it like? What were my parents like? What was the environment in the home like? What was the vibe, you know? Anxious, stressed, calm, peaceful, happy. And then having compassion, speaking to myself kindly, not dismissing, invalidating, criticizing myself, just asking myself, am I being safe right now? Am I being a safe adult in the way that I'm speaking to myself? And then with my kids, am I being a safe adult in the way that I'm speaking to them? Am I prioritizing safety? The relationship, connection, or am I prioritizing other crap like keeping the house clean, laundry, schoolwork, homeschool, academic stuff? Because if you prioritize that stuff, you will not win. It'll be a lot more painful than it needs to be. And also having compassion, I think, on if you are one of those people that feels very triggered by lockdowns, knowing where that comes from. And also, if you have a history of trauma, trauma, my favorite definition, as you guys know, because I say it 1,000 times, is Peter Levine, one of the gurus in Trauma Land, his definition, which is any experience where you feel profoundly helpless or lose your ability to cope. If you have experiences in your life where you have felt profoundly helpless or lost your ability to cope, which is probably everyone, just varying degrees, but it's all relative, right? So like if the worst thing that's ever happened to you is you broke your arm, that could have been highly traumatic, just as the person who was, you know, kidnapped, it could feel the same in your body because that's the worst that you've ever known. So it's not the pain Olympics, you know, it's all relative. But if you are finding yourself triggered by lockdowns, sometimes just the knowing that, because lockdowns make me feel so helpless, this taps into my other times of my life where I felt really helpless and lost my ability to cope or felt like I didn't have any control. So it can often sort of ignite old wounds and poke old wounds and hurt old parts of ourselves that we had that helplessness feeling. And so lockdowns can kind of remind us of that old stuff, you know? Like, if we put the analogy on it of like a bushfire, if you were in a really bad bushfire, you might feel a bit nervous around bonfires. You might feel a bit nervous driving through an area that was maybe where the bushfire took place that you were a part of or whatever, right? You kind of go, oh yeah, that makes sense. Or, oh, you were in a car accident, so you feel a bit nervous about getting in the car and going on a freeway. That makes sense, right? And this is the same. So then every time there's a lockdown, it's a bushfire, it's a car accident. So you can see why it kind of rubs you the wrong way because it reminds you of the bad thing that happened, right? And so if you look at it through the lens of trauma and through helplessness, well, it makes total sense then why so many of us are triggered by lockdowns, because it taps into all of our old stuff about feeling helpless. So sometimes I think, because I know you're probably thinking, well, what do I do? I don't know if this is so much of a do kind of thing, like, or I could give you strategies and tips. It's just the knowing, it's the understanding, the context, zooming out and seeing that there's so much more going on here than just it's a lockdown. Why am I having such a hard time with it? I'm being so pathetic. Why aren't my kids doing homeschool? Because all this stuff is happening behind the curtain that you can't see. So that's why it's hard. That's why you're not motivated. That's why you feel angry, because that's fight flight response. That's the fight. That's why you feel unmotivated, hard to feel regulated right now. Your body doing its job, you know, it's your body trying to survive and get through it. I guess if I were to say there are any specific do's and don'ts or strategies, it would be don't criticize, dismiss, invalidate, shame, judge, raise your voice at yourself for how you feel, how you act, what you accomplished today, what you didn't accomplish today, whatever. And then secondly, that same list with your kids and your partner, the people you live with, your housemates, whatever, because it just makes it worse. It just compounds it. So what do you do instead? Well, don't do that stuff. Calm, as calm as you can be. Peaceful, playful. Activating your playfulness is often a really underrated thing to do. Like just being playful, you know, creates safety. Because when you're running from a tiger, you're not thinking about making jokes or being playful. You're thinking about running away from the tiger. So when you activate the playfulness in yourself and silliness, it's often a really great way to bring safety back in. Creativity. Again, you don't paint and draw when you're running from a tiger. Or any of that stuff that just makes you feel safe. Painting, drawing, singing, watching TV. Stuff you would not do when you're being chased by tigers, basically. And then all the basics that you guys would know. Because there's 7,000 articles out there about it. Of eat well, get enough sleep, exercise, nature, blah, blah, blah. Everyone knows that. Gratitude. That's another one, actually, that we talked about this morning. Making a list, maybe. Stretch yourself. Don't do 10, because 10's easy. Maybe go 20 to 50 things that I'm grateful for. Your first few will be like, my health. I live in a safe country. I have food in my fridge. But then by the time you get to 20, you're like, oof, what else am I grateful for? If you give yourself the challenge, I did this before with a friend. If you set yourself the challenge of 50 in a day, and I'm going to text you my 50 at the end of the day, whew, because that what that means is in the whole day, you're looking for things to be grateful for. And you're focusing on that stuff rather than how much everything sucks and everything is closed and I can't do this and I hate lockdown. If you try to shift your attention to what is good and beautiful in my life, it's amazing the difference that that does to your nervous system and your state. Because again, we don't make those kinds of lists when we're running from a tiger. 10 is too easy. 10 you could come up with quickly. 20 is a bit more of a challenge. 50 is really pushing yourself throughout the day to really try to find your 50 in a day. So yeah. Thus endeth the lesson. That was my rant for today. Thank you all for listening to me rant. I hope that was helpful. I hope that was comforting, brings you some insight into how you're feeling and why you're feeling the way you're feeling, how to navigate this whole lockdown, up, down, what's happening, I'm in a washing machine kind of feeling. And my goal, I guess, is to give you some more capacity, because I think that's what we all would buy if we could buy it in a shop, is capacity. Chips, buckets. How do I expand my bucket so I have more capacity? How do I fill my bucket more? And I think understanding this stuff is one of the ways you can do that. So yeah, I might actually make this one into a podcast and put this out to the masses, because I think that this might be helpful for a lot of people to understand, because so many people don't know what's going on in their brain and in their body, and they're so hard on themselves and so mean and harsh and not kind and compassionate. And then that compounds the lack of safety, you know? Anyway, thanks for being here. Good to see you all, or see your names.
If you're a parent or a professional who works with children and you want my help in improving things with the kiddos in your life, or if you're simply a human being feeling kind of stuck and maybe kind of overwhelmed, my online programs have lots of resources, transformative content, one-on-one coaching, group coaching, and a supportive community. If you want to learn more, just go to HeidiRogers.com. All right, friends, thank you as always for tuning in today. Our time is our most precious asset, so I truly appreciate you sharing your time with me. I'll see you right back here for the next episode of Tell the Others.